coming backstage to know a little bit about that. I think a good thing to dive into, you know, first is thinking about how a founder deals with all the product decisions now that you are in charge of, a big team. And by the way, we'll have time, I guess, for a couple of kind of audience questions at the end. So if you want to think about that, you know, we'll get to it towards the end of the talk itself. But so, product from the perspective of a founder and how you kind of scale that as your organization scales, because you're a big team now. You're well into your life cycle. So how have you done that? What's the challenge of it?
Yeah. How many of you are product oriented entrepreneurs here? Been focusing primarily on product. Okay. Yeah. That's pretty awesome. Yeah. There are different kinds of entrepreneurs. You know, folks who are really tackling a particular business area and really think about the business problems, and it's about the business architecture and the ecosystems. Other kinds of entrepreneurs who are really focused on the product, sometimes it's a combination of the two. And I think that one of the things that product-oriented founders have to really think about is how do you go from the kind of early days in the garage before you release the product, then actually having released something into the wild and dealing with, you know, getting it into a state where lots of people are using it. And then from there, going on to kind of the second-gen product and really satisfying existing users, but also tackling, you know, a whole new set of new users. I think there's a lot of things that go into that. There's a sense of, I think, really understanding what people who are using the product care about and putting yourself in their shoes and really trying to capture the spirit of those people in all the product decisions that are being made in the company. And I think one of the most challenging things that all founders go through is how you scale that creative process.
Right.
You know, I was looking at how Pixar does this. There's some great speeches. The CEO of Pixar talks about how he's scaled that creative process there and how they've been able to come out with hit after hit after hit. And I think that is absolutely the biggest challenges that entrepreneurs face.
And you know, something else we talked about upstairs was the fact that someone like Facebook had come out. Obviously, you know, they have a billion users, but they're unafraid to kind of push the norms, and this is very much what Microsoft is doing. We'll see what the end result is, but kind of changing things up as it were. And so how much of that goes into your thought process, like the idea of you have a successful product, you've kind of created a paradigm that works for you guys, but how much is it not wanting to stagnate versus doing something completely new?
Yeah. I mean, that's I think there, as a product-oriented leader in a company, you have to be willing to both fight for those features that are the easy ones to cut that users are asking for, but they don't seem as important to the engineering team or the product team. They're not as sexy. They may not drive some big new, you know, feature. But they're critical for users, and so as a leader, you have to stand up for those and make sure they actually happen. Some percentage of those happen, and simultaneously, you also have to be willing to say, "We're willing to risk some amount of user backlash for this new area of the product that we're going to do."
Mm-hmm.
I think a good example of that is what Mark Zuckerberg has done with Facebook, where from time to time he'll make a controversial change with the UI. And there'll be this huge backlash, and then people kind of get over it, and the sort of fruits of that change take hold, and people realize actually that's a pretty good idea.
Right.
And you can obviously make some big mistakes there too, so you have to really be thoughtful about that. But balancing those things, both listening to your users and delivering on the things that you know are important to them so they feel you're being responsive as a company, and at the same time, being willing to get out ahead of what your users are really asking for and perhaps change some things that might actually upset some of your user base, perhaps early on, but you know it's the right thing for the product. And I think if you do that in a genuine way, for the right reasons, your user base will stay with you. But that's a really challenging problem.
And you know, you guys in particular, you're sort of a fascinating tale because so much of your product from launch was predicated on one device, that device being iPad. And obviously now you have more devices, but at the beginning it was iPad, and it was really sort of, it must have been a leap of faith for you to hope that was a successful product, especially in the face of just tablet failure after tablet failure throughout the years.
Yeah.
And so how important is that from a product perspective and from a founder perspective to think about kind of new ideas and really take a risk with doing it? Because you had been a successful entrepreneur before, and so, you know, you had some, you probably had some people thinking that, you know, you're a sure thing and you're going into this, but you took a real risk with doing something that you did.
I think that, you know, that we followed the, where the product took us, right? And so originally we were thinking that this would be something we would do on the web, and before the tablet happened, before the iPad. And as we developed it, I remember Marcy, who we were building the company with, she would come in and look at the designs that Evan and I, my other co-founder, were doing, and she would say, "I don't get it. It's not gonna, you know, how am I gonna click on this? How's that gonna work?" It just wasn't working, and I felt also like it was going to be kind of yet another Web 2.0 product, and there was just something missing. And as we reflected on it, we were also hearing these rumors of the tablet, and Apple, and all the press were writing about it. Apple wasn't giving any indication that this was real. But we thought, wow, you know, this form factor that you can hold, that you can sit with, that you can touch the content itself becomes the user interface. That's amazing. And what if we just focused on that mythical tablet? And the press had been at such a volume, we thought it's probably a pretty clear bet to make that it's going to happen. Oh,
good,
so that was
good,
one
good
question.
Put so much faith in
exactly. Yeah. Thank you very much, actually. Yes. But then the second bet was, of course, that it was going to be a popular device,
right,
and that it was going to succeed. But I really felt like, you know, what Apple had done with the iPhone was probably going to carry over to the tablet. So it didn't seem like a crazy bet to us. And we were only a few people, and we were betting the whole company, but it was only a few people, right? So we thought we would wait till the iPad, until the tablet was launched. We were so psyched. I'll never forget when it was launched. Downloaded the SDK instantly, started the link for it. And before that, we had actually these paper mock-ups of what it would be, you know, sort of just, you know.
So if the iPad hadn't come out, you could have just released those paper mock-ups.
Exactly.
Exactly. Really a great experience.
That's right.
And so, you know, kind of spinning off that, we're now kind of entering into next week. There's a lot of rumors of a new iPad version that may or may not be smaller. And so how do you think about that? Because, you know, you have now the different form factors. You have a version of the iPhone,